The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. The Cold Slither, you'll be joining us
soon. Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Hold your insulting tongue and mock my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. I'm your host, Tim Deal Double G. And I'm joined by the man behind the sound effects, at Agent_70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
We have at Roddy Cat on Twitter.
Hello.
And we at one point had two stands for dirts.
Twin dirts.
What's the wrestling term? Masked dirt one and masked dirt number two.
You can just call me the ding dongs, most people do.
Oh.
But no, the Chromebook works no better than Chrome, just so you guys know.
Aww.
So, mystery solved as far as that goes.
And for those wondering, we were having some discussion before we launched the show, trying to figure out why something wasn't working. A Google product wasn't working in Google Chrome, but works in Firefox and other browsers.
Internet Explorer.
Yeah, Internet Explorer of all things.
But anyway, make sure to go to our website, theclicknation.com, where you can find previous episodes of Comic Book Chronicles and Comic Book Reviews. Also on theclicknation.com, you can find icons to our social media accounts. That's Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Google+, and more. While you're on the website, make sure to subscribe to the Click Nation newsletter. Go to Dirt's website, popculturenetwork.com. Remember, we are part of the Cold Slither Podcast Network, a.k.a. the CSPN. Go to cspn.us. We also have a Redbubble shop where you can buy Comic Book Chronicles merchandise. Go to redbubble.com/people/CSPN/shop. And remember, we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. If you go to theclicknation.com/live, you'll always have each week's episode right there for you, ready to tune in. And if you're discussing comic books on social media, use the hashtags CBChron or Comic Book Chronicles. Join the conversation. So, this was a pretty big week in comic book news and comic book releases, new comic book day.
That's an understatement.
There were 10,000 new comics this week.
There's some weeks where I go, actually I don't even go if I actually don't have anything in my pull list. Hashtag pay off your pool.
That's right.
Pick up. This week, that wasn't the case because I think I had like 5 books in my queue, not counting the ones I got early to review and whatnot, so yeah, a lot to get through.
Yeah, pay off your pull came up with a pretty hefty price tag this week. So,
I see you over there holding some of yours in your hand.
Yeah, it was bad. It was bad.
And I'm complaining about the $30 I spent on books.
Yeah, right. I'm like, yeah, it was bad.
I spent an extra $40 altogether on back issue stuff this week. So.
But it sounds like good stuff from what you said.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so, okay, so basically there's a guy here, we're in central Illinois, and so he travels around central Illinois from Joliet down to just north of St. Louis, does this circuit, and comes through like every other month, I think, comes through town. And he always has these boxes. He just puts out long boxes full of books that he sells for $1, and then people buy tables around the edge of the room, and, you know, they sell more of the high-end stuff. And his signs are, each book is $1, or it's 10 for $5, or 50 for $20.
Wow.
And so basically you just start going through the long boxes and just, you know, trying to, you know, pull out random stuff. And I ran across a run of Solo Avengers.
Oh, no.
And what it's also Avengers Spotlight, but it's that Hawkeye series.
Sure.
It's like Hawkeye's yeah. team-up book. Mm-hmm. And there were, out of the first 25 issues, there were like 18 of the issues there. And then West Coast Avengers, I found, like, it went 2, 4, 12, 18, and then 35 through 48, something like that. So, like, I grabbed all of those, and then... I went to a different comic book store other than my own this week. Another guy who has a bunch of back issues and dugouts to fill in some of those holes from the books I picked up over the weekend. So altogether, I spent about $40 on just the random books from those series.
Nice.
That's wow. tall.
And that was pretty much mine, just grunt pull that same price.
Yeah, there were a ton of books this week. And even me, I don't grab that, but I had a ton of Marvel even.
Yeah.
I don't usually grab that much Marvel. So it was a big week.
So I guess it only makes sense to start with some of the bigger books of the week. Normally I jump straight to DC Universe Rebirth number one, but I feel like we should talk about some of the lead-ins beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
The finale of Darkseid War, and we had the final issue of Superman 52, aka the final days of Superman.
All right, well, where do you want to start? Which one?
Let's do Superman first, because okay. I feel like that was a nice, clean ending.
Well, yeah, but we might as well start from Justice League, since didn't Justice League lead into Superman?
No.
It was the other way around.
Well, I mean, kind of.
I should have read this, but...
Technically, Justice League happens before the Superman story, but it doesn't really matter.
Right.
Continuity, bah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was having a conversation with someone this week about where Darkseid War falls in DC continuity, and I was like, frankly, I just don't even think about it, for one. And number two, I was like, if you want to be technical, it takes place before DCU... Because that's when Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman all underwent changes, and all Wonder Woman did was change outfits.
Yeah, but for some ladies, that's a big change.
Yeah, this is true.
Took her 70 years to find the right outfit.
Goodness.
So, with art from Michael Janin and story from Peter Tomasi, who is going to be the writer on Superman, I believe. They ended off Final Days of Superman, and...
They finished off Superman.
Right.
Yeah, I was going to say, as what's been teased, they... Ashes to ashes, dust to dust.
Literally.
Superman, New 52 Superman is no more.
You know, it's... Like, I knew it was coming, and it got to the point in the story where you could tell that it was, you know, just a moment away. And, you know, I started to wonder, like, how deep is this story going to go? How touching is this going to be? Is this going to have a deep emotional pull? It was over.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, as soon as I was wondering how far it's going to go, it's, oh, no, he's dead now. Like, that's it. It's over. He's done.
It was very quick. It was very anticlimactic.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Because I read it, like I said, I read it, and I read this stuff. Like, this is probably the most DC I've read in one week, and I don't know how long. But, like, what part of it for me was like, well, we've seen Superman die before, and which in a much more triumphant, you know, way. So this happening, knowing especially that we were going to have some version coming up, you know, or versions coming up, much less one that showed up in the book, was like, okay, well. This changes something, but it doesn't necessarily change something because you know something's going to put it back together at some point, which is probably going to be the same thing we're going to talk about in another book. But, yeah, it was just like, well, kind of end it, and then you see the seeds from what's going to happen next, and it's like, well, and that was it. Like, yeah. Okay.
I didn't feel like it was bad, no. But it just didn't have that epic feel that it needed for being the death of Superman.
No, it didn't have that kind of impact.
And especially for a book, well, technically we have two Supermans who died in this one. Because Energy Superman is gone. Did he die? Well, he dispersed, I guess. I mean, I don't know. In do any of us really actually live?
Oh, no.
Is that air you're breathing?
Oh, no. There is no spoon.
I feel like of all the parts of Final Days of Superman, unfortunately, the finale was like the weakest part of it. Just because it just ended quickly, and there was, I mean, they showed, I can't remember if it was in that issue or in the Rebirth, where they showed the heroes kind of more, you know, mulling around the death site.
Oh, that was Rebirth, yeah.
That was Rebirth, okay. Because I was going to say, we only get to see, like, Superman, Wonder Woman, Lois, or anyone, like, mourning him. Lois just is going, she's back on the laptop writing the story up.
Which, and, you know, what she would have been doing anyway, so.
Yeah, I mean, they moved on.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was nice that we at least got those, like, if you want to call them character frames, where we see each of them dealing with the loss in a different way. You know, Jimmy Olsen has smashed his TV, and Lois is writing her story, and, you know, we get all those little things, but at the same time, it was just like, I felt like there just should have been so much more to this. Like, if Energy Superman's going to explode, and that's what overpowers Superman and kills him, that should have happened in the last issue, mm-hmm. and this issue should have been him fading away, saying his final words, dying, and then, you know, 15 pages of everybody reacting and dealing with it.
Just one big epilogue book.
And, like, what does this mean? Because that's one of the big things, is that you have people discussing it. Like, why is this important? And that's one of the things that helps pull a reader through it, is the actions of all the people that it affects. And you got a hint of that towards the end, but it didn't really happen. So at the end, I just got done reading it, and you just feel like, oh, okay.
Well,
it's over.
Well, I hate to say this, but you know, with the appearance of Lois and Clark Superman, the bearded one in the pages of this, and he plays a minor role, but he does play a role in the story. I think his appearance, and knowing that there is another Superman-esque character, you know, obviously Batman basically comes out and says there's lots of questions. And, you know, we understand that they're going to be answered at another time, which is what Lois and Clark Superman says. And, you know, I think that's what was eventually the part of the story that kind of hurried things along. You know, like, we know there's another Superman out there. So it's like, all right, let's not dwell too long on this version of Superman dying.
You know, there was a part of me that was like, when Batman said that, I was like, wait, is the question coming back?
Gotcha.
Technically, he is. He's Rorschach.
Oh, no. We're going to get there.
Oh, and that whole Batman thing. Yeah, we'll get there. Oh, jeez. But the one thing I can say about the Superman book is, like, it's like, for somebody who hasn't been keeping up with it like me, it did at least, which granted, I had you guys telling me what was going on when we talk about it anyway, so that's one thing. But it did kind of say, hey, well, this is why he's dying, basically, at least that much, you know.
Right.
No one just fresh out of it is not going to be able to just pull that out of it. I mean, we'll be able to pull that out of there, but then we'll still be lost because it's like, wait.
We're losing you, Roddy.
Roddy, you went back underwater.
Of course.
Just as he's making a valid, eloquent point.
But yeah, I will say that we ordered extras of this because we knew what was coming, and we did sell copies to random people, you know, who just walked in off the street. They wanted Rebirth, and didn't Superman die? Like, yep, it's this one right here. So people picked up that one a lot too. And from what I've heard, the people who read it, you know, they've commented on Facebook that they were able to understand it just fine. There weren't really any questions, like, they were lost, like, well, how did this happen, because most of them, they understood from reading on random stuff on the internet or from a headline on Bleeding Cool or whatever in the past, that they understand that there were these multiple Supermen running around, and they understood that the other Superman came out of Convergence. They knew that, whether or not they read it, but they knew that just because people have talked about it enough, so... Mm-hmm. I think as far as that goes, it was easy enough for a new reader to digest, even if it wasn't the most majestic story they could have done.
Gotcha.
My question is, I wonder, does the pre-New 52 Superman look at New 52 Superman at like, you're such a failure.
Oh, no.
You got killed less than a little over five years into your career, superheroing career. I've already married and got a son. That's but the Superboy.
I died and came back. Let's see you pull that off, chump.
Yeah.
Seriously. That's sad.
I guess that about sums up Superman 52. Just, again, I want to mention the art from Michael Janin. Very beautiful art. I'm a big fan of his work. So you can also follow it in the Rebirth as he's part of the art team on Batman. So he'll be rotating with David Finch.
All right.
So the next issue we had up was Justice League number 50.
Dark Side War Part 10.
Over and
so this
done.
Has been this has been dragging on for a while, but
thank
I don't even care because it's been awesome. Every single part I've enjoyed.
I've liked this story a lot, and again, it goes back to something I've said before, where this feels like a big epic tale. Like this is the type of story you need in a book that brings all these characters together. This felt like it was big and important, and a lot of stuff happened.
Ever,
but you know, it really didn't take forever in the sense of if you read all the issues together, it just took forever because the artwork kept getting delayed again and again and again.
Good job, Fabok.
Yeah,
but his art is cinematic in scope, so it more than makes up for it.
It's a beautiful, beautiful book. Yeah,
it definitely was.
Hefty. So this was an oversized issue, which is why it's $5.99.
Yep.
But so yeah, we got some answers to questions, and new questions were created.
Posed, yeah.
Especially yeah, the really. Ending.
Yeah, so
you mean the multiple endings a la Lord of the Rings?
So this is how you do when they say like, you know, Marvel talks about doing an Avengers crossover event that's, you know, just for the Avengers books, but it still encompasses like 8 different books. This was a event book in just one comic, and that was Justice League.
Yeah, this could have easily been a crossover if they had wanted this to be a like one of those summer things. This could have crossed over into Superman and Batman and Flash and Cyborg and Green Lantern and Wonder Woman, you know, but instead it was just all contained within Justice League. And it's funny because I went back with this one and I reread the first couple issues of the story, and I had forgotten a lot of the early stuff with Mr. Miracle and some of the gods of Apocalypse, you know, trying to hunt him down and all that stuff going on. I'm like, oh, right, that was this story. Because that was almost a year ago that came out.
Yeah. So, going to try to go off the top of my head of the big key things that happened. Of course, the Justice League lost their god powers that they had gotten from Darkseid when he was killed. Superwoman. Yeah, spoilers. Superwoman perished. Her baby is still important, though, because Grail took the baby and then sort of turned him into Darkseid. Baby Darkseid. Steve Trevor. I can't.
Go ahead.
Steve Trevor lost his powers, just like the Justice League did. What else happened?
Which I will say, I was actually afraid that they were going to kill off Steve Trevor, and I'm glad they didn't.
No. Well, he's got to be alive for the movie when it rolls around.
Well, yeah, but that's after Rebirth, so who knows?
They could pull
another Steve Trevor out of their hat. But
that's true.
I thought for sure he was going to die in the story, and he didn't. And when I got to the end, I was like, oh, he's still alive. All right, good for you, Steve Trevor.
Well, I saw he was solicited in the Wonder Woman book, I think. So
yeah, but like I said, that's after Rebirth, so you never know.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Could have been pre-New 52, I guess. Yeah,
like what version that is, right?
Steve Trevor right. From the 1940s comes out. Hey, Wonder Woman, you're the bee's knees.
Oh, no.
Oh, We lost a lantern and got him right back.
Yeah, okay. Seriously.
Thanks for that. I forgot about.
Well,
that.
See, and here's the thing, because like I went through just like this is going to be the whole thing between like so this whole thing for me. Never read any of this book, so and hearing about it from you guys, but this book did a pretty good job of kind of saying, hey, this is kind of what's been going on. Go, and fight happening, and you know the narration by Diana and whatnot, and what's kind of going over there. So. At first, I was like, the hell's going on here? And I remember some of the stuff that you guys were saying and just kind of went with it. And I was like, all right, this is enjoyable.
Yeah, and that's also good in a monthly book to have those little recaps because a lot of times certain books will come out month to month and I don't remember what happened last month and they don't tell you anything about what happened last month. So right. Then I have to go dig it out and read it like, what the hell is going on? And then find it. So, yeah, I do appreciate that. But I did like the one piece of narration when... Power Ring becomes a Green Lantern. There's that little comment box from the narrator that says, people don't question why she became a lantern. They just question why Earth needed yet another Green Lantern.
Right.
And I'm like, yes, exactly.
That makes, what, five or six now?
Who knows?
Yeah.
There's probably four Green Lanterns in China, two in Australia.
Oh, no.
One in the UK. We just never see them, you know. But they're probably yet.
There. Barda... shows up with the Furies and then leaves with the Furies. That happened.
Made a
deal. I like that this was a so you know, it was a Justice League story, but Wonder Woman was the narrator throughout.
Right.
It was this was an important story for her because as we found out at the end of the issue, she has a twin brother.
Dun dun dun.
Yeah, I was hunting for the sound effect.
Well, here's the end of the book. Pretty much, well, at least definitely going into the end was pretty much at least telling me in a way. I was like, okay, hey, this is done. Now we're going into Rebirth. This is stuff that's going into Rebirth. Go.
You know. Yeah, it's definitely setting up Rebirth. So.
Did you talk about the Batman? I think we talked about this already, but the revelation of what Batman learned while sitting on the Mobius chair about the Joker?
The three Utes?
Yeah, the three Utes.
Well, first he had Hal Jordan had to give Batman his Green Lantern win to will give him the willpower to step off the Mobius chair. But yes, before stepping off, he, of course, a couple issues ago, learned the identity of the Joker, and of course he was all surprised and shocked and said, you know, this that can't be true. And what he found out is apparently there's three Jokers. Mm. One more, and you have the card set, right?
Oh, no.
So I'm going ahead and say this ahead of time. If we found out that Rebirth had to do with the three Jokers, I'm throwing something. Like, the Rebirth was all caused because of the three Jokers. Like, I'm just going to throw something, even though I have very little invested in it.
Well, we know the Joker. Well, at least as far as right now, we know the Jokers didn't cause Rebirth or cause Flashpoint.
Swerve we'll
later,
right?
And I'm trying to remember. I guess at the very, very end, Owlman and Mobius. Was it Mobius? Metron. Went off. Because Owlman now is in possession of the Mobius chair when Batman hopped off of it. And Metron tries to warn Owlman that, you know, don't try to consume all of the universe's information all at once. And Owlman's like, psh, I got this. And then some guy off camera does some stuff.
Or girl or somebody. Yeah,
evaporates both of them. And it says, to be continued in DC Rebirth number one.
I do like that the Hal's ring got used as a crowbar to get Batman off the chair.
Yeah, crowbarred him off of it.
Yeah, it was fun.
Green crowbar. So that leads into DC Rebirth number one, where it's Jeff Johns' swan song in comics, as he'll be working in the DC film division for the foreseeable future. Which is sad.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So I'll just say I enjoyed and loved Rebirth. DC Rebirth, DC Universe Rebirth number one, and I'd have a lot more
questions,
confidence in it if Geoff Johns was writing all the comics coming out of Rebirth. But he's not, so cross your fingers.
So before we get deep into Rebirth, I will say that I did go back and after reading Rebirth and finding out, of course, what the spoiler is that I did go back and start digging through some of the things that led up to it. And you can tell that at least they knew they were building to this story or something like this story as far back as issue, I think it's 32 of Superman when Geoff Johns took over that book, which was almost 2 years ago. It could be all the way back to 2012 when they started working on the Beyond Watchmen books. So it is possible that this is something that they've been building to for a while that they knew, you know, because even when they did something like Convergence, there were a lot of things. It's like, well, why the heck did they do this? I understand that they were moving their office, so they had to come up with some random event, but it just seems like a lot of this didn't seem to matter, and now we see things of that coming out that did matter. And, you know, you go back, you can look at Flashpoint, and there were certain things that were never quite explained in that story, but you're just like, okay, well, we'll roll with it. And now some of those things make a little more sense. Now that we've started Rebirth and some of the revelations we've gotten out of that, characters in Geoff Johns' Superman run who appeared and then just kind of disappeared, and you never really, like, there was some subplot with them, but then they were just gone, and you never really got any answers of why they were there, they're reappearing in this story. So at least 2 years ago, they knew they were building up to something, whether or not it was Rebirth was in their mind or they were just going to do some sort of, you know, crossover crisis type event. They at least knew 2 years ago, maybe as far back as 2012.
Well, well done so far, I guess. They definitely cleaned up some things, at least from what to some of the stuff that I knew included this, the stuff that was, like you said, was kind of missing, well, not said in Flashpoint, from what I remember reading of it.
Sure. And when we were talking right before the show went live, I was mentioning that I was pleasantly surprised by the book as a whole. I enjoyed it more than I thought I would, even though I had been spoiled about the identity of the character that was basically our point of view character.
Did you read the Bleeding Cool article?
No, it got spoiled to me on Facebook.
Oh, okay.
because, you know, headlines are headlines, right?
Right.
For me, it was funny to see DC trying to reestablish the continuity that was basically stopped in its tracks in the wake of Crisis. You know, because, you know, I joke, and we've been doing this show for a number of years now, and I've always said, my understanding of DC continuity kind of stops at the, you know, like right at Crisis, pretty much right when, you know, the Wolfman and Perez Teen Titans kind of ceased to be recognizable. So it's kind of funny to see DC try to kind of restart and reboot their continuity to fill in that sizable gap that basically includes Crisis and Flashpoint and the New 52.
Well, and that's something that was cool. Yeah, that's something they said in Convergence, was that they went back and stopped the crisis from happening.
Right.
But then you never saw any fallout from it.
Right. And this is, like I said, this is like them filling it in. You know,
the only things that you really saw were Parallax, Hal Jordan returned, and we got the Superman from the 90s back in the Superman Lois and Clark series. But those were the only two things that really seemed to come back out of it. But Rebirth, we find out that somehow Kid Flash has also survived from the crisis, except because of Flashpoint somehow screwed everything up and no one remembers him anymore, even though technically the crisis never happened,
right.
but the Flashpoint did.
Mm-hmm. So that's where I had the questions.
I stopped questioning at that point. That's the thing, because I figured they're just going to reset everything at this point.
Because that's one of those things where you know, just because, like, you can go back, if you read, you know, tons of bad science fiction novels, you can go back and change something that happened, you know, years ago, but some of the things that come in between that moment you changed in the past and now would still happen because they were, you know, destined to happen or whatever. So they can go back and stop the crisis on Infinite Earths from happening, but that doesn't necessarily mean the Flashpoint wouldn't happen because enough time in between and it's something that the universe still, you know, wanted to do. That's one of those, you know, time paradox things that you see a lot in especially bad science fiction novels. So comics is, you know, really the birthplace for bad science fiction. So
sure.
There you go.
Got a question from Twitter from at William B. West. He says, why does DC even refer back to Crisis anymore? It holds virtually no meaning since Barry came back.
It was the first time they tried to explain the changes in continuity that had happened just because of publishing. It was basically no prizing the DC universe. And it was such a, it was like the first, you know, huge, real earth-shattering event, so to speak, within the universe. So it's also perennially in print. So it's one of those stories that DC will always keep reprinting. It's always out there, and it's a story that people reference and go back to a lot. So when someone's going back for like the essential reading of the DC universe, you've got like the Killing Joke, you've got the Death of Superman, and Crisis is one of those key stories because of what it actually was for the industry. And so even though they may have redone or undone some of the things that happened as far as the story goes, it's still a big piece of their history. And one thing that they've emphasized with Rebirth is going back and honoring their history as opposed to what they tried to do in Flashpoint, which was a clean break from their history. Right. They had tried to cut all that stuff off, and that's what most people complained about, was that all of that history was gone. And Crisis had kind of done the same thing, so now it's building that bridge back. And one of the things they've said is that when they did the New 52, it brought in a bunch of newer, younger readers, but it was off-putting to a lot of the older readers. Now they're hoping that they can fold some of those older readers back in with Rebirth and, you know, build the core audience back up with the new readers that they've brought in and bringing back those old people.
So it seems like they're more focused on the older fans and less on the newer, and just sort of assuming the newer fans will stick around.
Well, yeah, it's not like they're ignoring the newer fans. It's more like, okay, you guys are already here now. Like we,
right. It's more like they're blending the two.
Right. It's like now we're trying to bring in these other people back in with you. And you know, it is funny in a way because I've read so much of this stuff and my son hasn't. You know, so he reads something like Rebirth, and he's like, well, who's this guy? And it's like, I can give him a history of, you know, that character. And he may not have cared about Kid Flash before, you know, because Kid Flash is not on the Teen Titans Go cartoon. So it's not one of his main DC heroes, you know, to go to. But, you know, then I can kind of talk about, you know, Wally West and Justice League Europe and some of that stuff. And I can see, you know, to him, it's like this idea of, you have like this tunnel vision focus of what's out there, and this starts to open them up to the history of things. And suddenly there's a whole lot more out there to read and to look at. And he's interested in things that he wouldn't have been 6 months ago, you know, just because now it's kind of reopening that stuff.
So Crisis, that's where Barry first died, right?
Right. Barry died. Supergirl died. All the other Infinite Earths were, you know, the crime syndicate, all of those guys, they all died and got wiped out.
All no need to ring the spoiler bell on that one.
Yeah, I think a storyline from 86, I think, is open for discussion.
See, my problem is I get all the Crisis C's mixed up because there's Crisis on Infinite Earths, Infinite Crisis.
Final Crisis.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
But then there's also Flashpoint and Zero Hour. Convergence, you kind of tie into that. But see, I like that. I like reading those stories, and I especially like Geoff Johns, the way he does the Grant Morrison thing, except he does it much more accessibly, where he pulls little threads from the past and starts tying them together in order to bring all these storylines into one. Grant Morrison does that too, but a lot of times he does it in such a meta and existential way that you get done reading it and you're like, okay, I know that ties back to something, I recognize the name, but I don't know what the hell is going on. Whereas Geoff Johns pulls all these things in and makes it, you know, makes it work. But that's one thing I really like when Geoff Johns does these types of events and when he does these big stories, is that he grabs these things from the past that, you know, a giant nerd like me who's been reading this stuff since the early 80s and has gone back and read a lot of the stuff from the 60s and 70s, you know, I understand where all this stuff is coming from, and I get the idea of what he's trying to do, and that's exciting for someone like me. I love this book. I mean, as far as I was concerned, this is, like, one of the greatest things. They still have several issues to screw it up.
Yeah, I was going to say even though I was spoiled by posts on Facebook, I was mildly disappointed when we got to the last page and the cliffhanger reveal in DC Rebirth, and I just sort of sighed and said, oh, okay. And then we get to the epilogue, and I'm like, oh, okay. But well, see, up to that point, I was pleasantly surprised.
Well, see, I like that because that's also like a technically a fold, a parallel universe of the DC universe that's never interacted or crossed over.
Right, and
with
I think
DC universe.
And I think that was done very much on purpose.
Oh, I'm sure. But like, yeah. I said, they started planning those Watchmen books in 2012. At least that's when they were announcing them and doing all the press for them and everything. So
right. And so, they sat and sat and sat on comic book store shelves.
Actually, it's funny. There were, I think, 8 different series that came out, and 3 of them did really well, and the rest kind of meandered as far as the sales and the interest went with people. But one thing that I really enjoyed about Watchmen in general is that, you know, if you know the story of how Watchmen was written and how it was brought together, those were the old Charlton Comics superheroes. Right. And he was supposed to do a story with them, but they decided they liked the heroes. They didn't want them dying off, but they liked Alan Moore's story, so they just had him change them into different characters. So Peacemaker became Comedian, Thunderbolt became Ozymandias, Captain Atom became Dr. Manhattan, you know, so on and so forth. And now to see it, like, refold back in, I want to see... you know, like Night Owl meet Blue Beetle. I want to see Captain Atom go up against Dr. Manhattan. Like, I want to see those characters crash back into each other with the way the universes are coming. So, you know, again, they have several issues that they can screw it up, but for me, for right now, looking at this and thinking about the possibilities, you know, like, it's WrestleMania is always way more exciting, like, a month beforehand when you think of all the things that could happen at the show.
Right.
But then when the show actually happens, you're always disappointed because it's never as good.
Right, it's never executed the way you think it could be.
Right. And so, like I said, they've got time to screw it up, but right now I loved it, and I'm really excited about the possibilities of what this brings.
Okay.
Cool.
And it blew my mind.
I was about to say, and the best thing of all is the takeaway from this whole thing. It was all about the love we'd forgotten, and now we're getting it back.
Yeah, and that is also something that was reverberated in Superman, Lois, and Clark that came out this week. If anybody read that, one of the key things in that storyline is that Superman is talking to his son, who's going to be the new Superboy, and he's basically saying, you know, this world is a lot like ours, but it's a lot more cynical, and it's a lot darker than the world that we came from. But, you know, hopefully we can still be I forget exactly what he says, like, we can shine a light, be a ray of hope. I forget exactly what the term
is. Is that Geoff Johns teasing his direction for the DC Cinematic Universe?
Very well could be. We know there's a lot of changes going on there, too, but like I said, that's something that's echoed here, is that idea that this new 52 universe has been much more pessimistic and darker, and here's their chance to kind of lighten it back up and I don't know, make it happy again.
Sure.
So we should talk about some of the reveals. One happened 6 pages into...
Hold on. If you ain't been spoiled yet, you're going to be spoiled even more now.
So we had the return of Wally West, Kid Flash. Not sure why they chose put him in a Kid Flash costume instead of grown-up Wally West.
Because it would have been very confusing.
I think it's because of the Titans Hunt storyline that's been going on. It ties into that. Because in that storyline, the Teen Titans of the New 52 universe, I forget exactly what I've just skimmed through that series. I didn't read it very deeply, but
I think didn't they have like all they had? They seemed to all have amnesia or something.
Cause like they knew something was missing,
right?
And they knew somehow they were connected to another group of Titans, or there was another group of Titans trying to search them out, or something like that. And somehow they found they were connected, and they discovered that there were other Titans that had been on the team that they've forgotten that are not there anymore, and they. In the final issue of that, they're all sitting in like this diner having coffee, and they're like, it still feels like there's something missing. I'm not sure what it is. And off in the distance, there's this yellow thunderbolt that hits, and it sparks their memory, but they can't quite remember like what's going on. And that's your cue that Kid Flash is still out there somewhere, that they haven't remembered him yet, even though they've remembered the other Titans from that era. So I think that's why he's as Kid Flash, is because they were pulling from that era of the Titans, those days of the.
Okay. And I need to actually finish Titans Hunt number 8 from I think last week.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to go back and read that entire series more in depth because, like Same. I said, I just kind of skimmed through it, and then now reading this, it's like, oh, I bet there's a lot more clues in that too that I need to read more deeply.
So I reviewed DC Universe Rebirth number 1 on comp. On theclicknation.com. You can check that out. Let's see, another... So we had sort of quick peek-ins at some characters that will be playing pivotal roles in, I guess, upcoming books, like a character from the Justice Society who I don't know, named Thunder.
Johnny Thunder.
Yes.
He was a member of the Justice Society. He would... say the mathematical formula, and this Thunderbolt character, this purple Thunderbolt guy, would appear. Yeah. Well, it was
we got a tease.
Come on.
We got a tease for the Legion of Superheroes.
I'm pretty sure that's going to be Saturn Girl.
Okay. Who was? We saw Aqualad, aka right. Calder. Aqualad.
Blue Beetle,
the Atom, both Atoms, both Blue Beetles. I'm trying to remember, I guess Ted Kord hasn't actually appeared in the New 52, has he? He's just been referenced, I believe.
Right. I want to say he did.
I remember his father was killed at the beginning of Forever Evil, I believe, off-panel.
I think also when World's Finest with Power Girl and Huntress, who were Supergirl and Robin from Earth 2, when they were running around, I think they also ran across Ted Kord.
Okay.
But he was just, you know, a tinkerer, billionaire guy. He's like basically Iron Man without any superhero suits. He's just a guy building this crazy technology that has millions of dollars and owns this huge company.
Okay. So Wally's sort of bouncing around the DC universe trying to get a connection with someone so they can pull him out of the Speed Force, which he's become trapped in. It's funny that Wally's the one that got trapped in the Speed Force when it was Barry who kicked off Flashpoint and everything to begin with.
Hey, look, it's always going to be a Flash.
How did Wally get
the Speed Force? Everything. The Speed Force, though, is any speedster in the DC universe is actually tapping into the Speed Force. That's something from the 90s that they started playing around with, where it didn't matter how you got your powers. If you were a speedster, you were tapping into that Speed Force, and anybody who was connected to the Speed Force was actually like drawn to each other and connected to each other somehow, even though they didn't understand, kind of like the Force, the midichlorians, you know, which they never should have explained as midichlorians, but the idea of the Force, you know, anybody who's in the Force who wields the Force is connected to anyone else who's a Force user, and that's the same thing with the Speed Force, is anybody who uses that Speed Force is connected to each other, even if they don't know exactly how.
So the answer to any trivia is Speed Force.
There you go.
Oh, no.
So Wally finally runs into Barry Allen as he's trying to say his goodbyes because he thinks he's about to die. Barry, of course, pulls him out the Speed Force. They have a nice touching moment. We catch up with the death of Superman from Superman 52 we talked about. Batman, of course, was researching the three Jokers. And then we find out who is behind the lost 10, they call it 10 years of the New 52. And it's characters from another book. Of course, we've already talked about it, I believe. The Watchmen characters. As Batman finds a, I guess, which character has the smiling yellow button with the teardrop?
Comedian.
Yeah, finds that in the Batcave, so shit's about to go down, apparently. And that, oh yeah, that, I guess it was Dr. Manhattan who blew up Metron and Owlman on the moon in Justice League 50.
Matt Wang just corrected me on Twitter. Johnny Thunder said a magic word. The mathematical formula is Johnny Quick. So, I said Johnny Thunder, I meant Johnny Quick, I guess.
Okay.
And he out-nerded me. I feel bad now.
And then, well, I guess now I need to correct William Bruce West because he's saying that it's interesting that Wally didn't seem to give a shit about his lost kids, only cared about Linda. If he was, I guess, the younger version of... Well, he, no, I was, that's not right here. Cause I was going to say if he was the younger version, he wouldn't have had the kids, but he remembered all the... meeting Linda and marrying her, I believe. So, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, once you start time traveling, though, I mean, you know, everything's kind of out the window.
Yeah. So I guess all four of us were pleased with DC Universe Rebirth, number one?
Yeah, for the most part.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. I loved it.
All right, so that was the big...
And the artwork, even though they had, like, 20 different artists working on it, it was beautiful throughout the whole book.
I honestly couldn't tell one from the other at certain points. I could tell Ethan Van Sciver started it off, but like the transitions from Ivan Rice to Phil Jimenez, Gary Franks I could recognize because it's like people's faces always look weird to me.
It's you would get a couple pages in and then you'd realize, oh, that's a different artist. But at the time when you're flipping from page to page, it didn't automatically hit you because they all have great, highly detailed styles.
Mm-hmm.
But you would just look at a particular panel and be like, oh, wait, this is a different artist now. But at no point did it like pull you out of the story because it was switching around artists. They were all, every person that they got in the book is doing super high quality, highly detailed art, and it all looked great.
And keeping a very consistent, which is something that I've always talked about, a pseudo DC house art style.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, I noticed a lot of George Perez influences because he had done Crisis on Infinite Earths. So I noticed, like especially when he starts pulling out towards the other Wally West, during that sequence, there's a lot of the George Perez thing where he has like the boxes kind of stacked on top of boxes, a bunch of like little slivers of boxes in between the panels, you know, all the different stuff that George Perez likes to do, especially with the faces, a lot of details on the faces. And
well, I think that's the Phil Jimenez section, and obviously Phil Jimenez definitely does George Perez a lot of justice.
Yeah. So it definitely works and makes sense in that.
Yeah. Okay. I guess you've already talked about the finale of Superman, Lois and Clark, as far as DC books. A couple of other books ended. The Omega Men, Batgirl, all Flash. Books I haven't read yet, but I just wanted to at least
Flash ended, them. Grayson ended,
Teen Titans ended.
I was about to say, I have to beg the forgiveness of our audience because there's so many books out this week. There's no way we're going to read all of them.
Oh, yeah. And
I mean, that's every week.
One little quick mention.
But this week, more so than even others.
True.
I start reading Scooby Apocalypse number one, and it's better than I thought it was going to be. I haven't finished it yet.
My son loved it. He wants me to read it. I just haven't gotten to it yet. But he really likes the cartoon a lot right now. And I can't stand the new cartoon because all the voices are wrong. so it just drives me nuts whenever it's on. But the comic is apparently an alternate take on the Scooby team. They're older or different somehow, whatever.
They don't all know each other, which that was the surprise for me. I thought going in it was like, okay, here's the team already together, then working to stay alive during the apocalypse, I guess, or zombie apocalypse, which I'm assuming is what is taking place in this issue. But it's the writing duo of Giffen and DeMatteis.
Yeah.
And art from Howard Porter, so they've got the witty dialogue down. I enjoy Howard Porter's art, so we'll see if I keep up with it. Anyone else read it besides Dirt?
Nay.
Nope.
Okay. The other from Marvel side of things, huge book this week for as far as news items was Captain America Steve Rogers number one.
Yep. Oh boy. Yeah, you know, it's funny because given the exposure that the character has received now that he's been in 5 movies. By the way, I did happen to catch Captain America Civil War in full legitimate IMAX before it left the official IMAX theater this week, and it was awesome. I actually did notice very many things this time around, the officially 4th time around for me, seeing it in full IMAX.
Was there an unofficial time that you saw it?
Well,
yeah,
a couple of times when I kind of stopped and started versions that I may or may not have gotten to watch on my computer. So, you know, like I said, it's the 4th full time, fourth full viewing.
And let me go ahead and say this: my side was not an indictment of the story because I thought the story was actually pretty good. It's
the twist.
Indictment of the no. It wasn't even the twist. Oh. I actually liked the twist. It's the response from people that just
is stupid. Yeah. Again. So let me ring the spoiler bell again, and we'll get into it. All right, let's roll.
I didn't read it, but of course it was spoiled to me by 20 dozen different people.
Yep. Asking you for your opinion, right?
And yeah, and the thing that I just kept saying was, well, how is this any different from any other twist they throw in where it's a double agent or a mind washing or a life decoy or whatever? And they said, because Nick Spencer gave some sort of interview where he said it's not a different Steve and it's not a brainwashing thing. It's legitimate all the way through. Or something along those lines.
And oh, I'm, my God.
That still doesn't rule out there being some alternate thing. It could be,
right.
I don't know, Kobe threw in it could be like a Spider-Man thing where it was like, hey, there's an alternate Steve from alternate Earth whose brain patterns that were just sucked in to give him back his body or some stupid like that. I don't know.
Right. But,
you're sighing at a lot of the stuff in Rebirth, but an alternate Steve from an alternate universe
I did not sigh at the stuff in Rebirth. And no, I'm sorry. Like I said, that sigh was because of the response to the twist in this book, not because of the story.
Right. And you know Spencer's going to try to sell this hard so that people go in and buy it. Like I said, capitalizing off of the exposure from the Civil War movie. So he has every incentive to go to give interviews saying, by the way, this changes everything.
Well, and I'll have to say that honestly, going into this series, there was very little interest ahead of time.
Right.
The Sam Wilson book just really has not gone over well. It is not a good. It's not even in the top 10 of Marvel books that we sell.
Right.
And so this book coming out, I thought for sure a lot more people would be excited. And then you factor in they gave away the free comic book day, a lot more people would be excited, and it really didn't have a lot of interest. And so then this quote-unquote controversy, suddenly we had people, even people that are not regulars, just random people coming in, hey, do you have that new Captain America number one? And it's like, well, we sold out because nobody really wanted it. We didn't order high on it.
Sure. You know what's funny about that is, you know, obviously they changed expectations when they gave him the new costume and the new shield, right? So you're not 100% sure what you're getting when you get when you pick up this book, and you know, and it's evident on the cover, the regular cover. I actually don't have the regular cover. I have the J. Dilla hip hop cover.
Oh, nice.
And the it's the Scotty Young variant cover, which is really cool.
I'm trying to find the right shield.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Nice. So, you know, that being said, you know, by giving Cap, you know, Steve Rogers this new look and new shield, it's yes, you know that it's Steve Rogers, and yes, that's the Captain America that you know from the movies. But if you're walking past it in a storefront or even in the comic shop and you see it and you're thinking, why the change? But with this story out there and this controversy out there, that's going to drive sales. That'll drive people to the store.
So I'm going to say this. The reason actually why I looked at this book was because of actually Nick Spencer's writing, because I kind of like what he's done with Sam's book, some part, because the way he's written certain characters was like, okay, that's the person you could actually see, you know, mm-hmm. out and about, or at least see the stereotype of. And so some of that kind of played in on a slightly larger scale in this book. And like I said, just there was no real interest in reading this book up until you saw the brouhaha rising up from it, and I feel sorry for his mentions. Mm-hmm. But story-wise, I thought it was good, and I'm kind of want to see what's next, and I'm, you know, if we get a good story out of this, that's pretty much the main aim of it. If we don't, then hey, if it fell flat, then all this stuff about it being stuff and he fucked it up and whatever else is really stupid, because people, right. These writers can't just write a character all willy-nilly without somebody signing off on this stuff.
Right.
So well, this stuff came from on high, that the fact that he was able to do this and
right,
probably was
giving him
some
the permission,
input.
Right.
Yeah, and probably put some input into it.
Right.
So before you go attacking the writer, think right. about that dumb shit you're saying.
Well,
which I know you won't.
But, no, I think you know what it is. I think people are putting a much different value on what it is they actually
yeah.
did. And I was kind of bothered by that personally. You know, because basically what it came down to, what I saw online and what some people were throwing in my face when I said, "Hey, take it easy, just wait for the rest of the story to unfold." They're like, "Well, how can you spit on the creators who were Jewish and created this character who was created to fight the Nazis, and now he's a Nazi?" I'm like, oh goodness, we're not going that far, people. We're not there yeah. yet. He said Hail Hydra.
Yeah, exactly. We have no idea where this story is going to go.
That's kind of the point of Hydra, though. But a lot of people don't have faith in Marvel or DC anymore to be true to the characters. So when they do something weird like this, most people look at it and say, well, yeah, they're changing everything because they've changed so many other stuff before, randomly trying to inflate sales. I mean, mm-hmm. that's their company. That's what they do.
Right.
You know, but a lot of people just don't have faith that they do things to tell the best story as opposed to try to get a headline and get a bump in sales.
Right. Okay, but be that as it may. Go ahead.
I was going to say they take it as an insult.
Yes.
They're changing.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that people aren't overreacting, because like I said, every time someone came up to me, I go, well, it's just like every other comic story. You know, it's a double agent, a brainwashing, a life model decoy. It's Super Patriot got a little more plastic surgery and got inserted into his place, and Steve Rogers is tied up in a broom closet somewhere. Or, you know, you never know. They always have one of those things in their back pocket that they yeah. pull out at the random moment. So
no, this is, you
I,
know
I don't
this...
care as far as that goes, but to say, you know, like, well, the writer's not just going to go off on his own and make something crazy like this happen. No, they're not, but people don't trust that the company editorial wouldn't sign off on something like that anyway. You know,
all right,
that's all I'm saying.
Okay, so here's where I have a problem with that whole faith thing. I agree with you on that. I'm sure there is a subsection that does feel like that. But I'm also thinking about where are some of these people coming from with it? Like, I'm pretty sure, the core people who are making the argument have their take on what they feel Cap should be and how Cap is and all that stuff. And they have that whole faith thing you're talking about. But I'm pretty sure there's a bunch of people that are just coming in through this just from the movie.
Yeah.
That are just coming up, that haven't even read Captain America in I don't know how long, and just read that, hey, Captain America's changed, and you know he's back, but he changed, and this happened.
That's definitely a big part of the people asking me. I personally
think it has less to do with faith than actually, at least on the whole. I'm sure, like I said, there's probably a subsection that is, has less to do with faith than it's like, hey, this character's, you know, a Nazi. Yeah. This character's changed for this and that, the other, and we don't even know what.
And but then at the
rabble.
At the same time, you've got the other people who are sitting there going, well, it's a bold new direction for a bold new era. They're shaking things up and whatever. And it's like, well, probably not.
Yeah, probably not.
As much as you're excited saying, look, they're changing everything. They're being brave and whatever. It's like, well, in 6 months, it probably won't be. You know what I mean? It goes both ways as far as people freaking out. I think it's just another one of those. It's the internet, and the internet does things. And, you know, you're better off just being like, okay, I'm not going to be on Facebook for a couple days. I'll just check my PMs, and that's going to be it. You know, that's generally how I get through my week anymore is people come up to me and ask me, and I tell them, but otherwise I'm not posting on Threads on Bleeding Cool and going to CBR and trying to flame somebody because there's just no point in trying to get into some of these discussions.
It's just funny because I guess the last point I'll make on this is, you know, the last story that probably should have raised a lot of eyebrows, and probably did, I just don't remember it that well because it's been so long, is with Winter Soldier, right? Bringing back Bucky and making it a real thing. So, but that was pre-movie exposure. That was pre kind of...
But remember how many people freaked out that Captain America had a gun? He can't have a gun.
Oh, in the first movie, correct.
Well, no, with Bucky, with Winter Soldier.
Yeah, with Bucky. But it wasn't as bad as
no, but Captain America being black. Hadn't the first movie come out? Even though it hadn't come out yet.
But yeah, I mean when they showed the artwork, the Alex Ross designed costume, and he's got that gun holster, there were a lot of people freaking out about Captain America. How can they have Captain America have a gun? He's the pacifist.
And it's those same people. Some of those same people.
Right.
So. I say more guns. Give everybody guns. They have a toy of Captain America's shield that actually shoots out darts. That's what they need to bring back. They need to have shooting like a machine gun out of the end of his shield. That's what they need.
Goodness.
So here's a question. You think, so check this out. I don't know if y'all see the screen cap that I've gotten on. I wonder if we're going to get this shield. I saw that from Chris Samley had retweeted from Brett Schooner. This is a couple of pages from an old Captain America book, I guess.
I'd buy that cover.
Mm. You want a cover form, in other words.
That would be something right there, man. Who's that, Faustus? Yeah, there's Faustus.
Yeah, Faustus. Yeah.
So that's Captain America, Steve Rogers, number one. Let's see, what else came out this week?
Oh, man.
I'll just touch on very quickly the other number one that came out for Marvel as Nighthawk number one.
Yes.
Hip-hop cover.
Oh, it was terrible.
It was pretty mediocre. I was gonna say it's pretty mediocre from my point of view. I liked the narration. I liked the setup. I am not keen on the villain.
The artwork is god awful with this book.
I haven't been a fan.
I don't agree with that. I think
it's a step up. Ramon Villalobos.
Actually, I like it. I think this is the best his work has looked.
Exactly. His heart is step up.
Previously, I haven't enjoyed much of it.
To me, this looks like one of those comics that the guys in the artist's alley are trying to pawn off on you when you're walking by. They have that sad look in their eyes like a child and you to buy a cigarette out of a box. Please buy my comic. That's what the artist is doing.
I think that's being disrespectful, Dirt.
It is because it disrespected my eyes.
Listen, I honestly thought that this was very Steve Dillon-esque, but a slight step up from it in some respects. I felt like the setup and the villain at the end were just pretty mediocre to me. I liked the setup of the Nighthawk character and his supporting cast, but I was not very keen on just what he's doing, like what he's doing and
also
the direction it's going.
It felt very disjointed as it jumped from story point to story point. It didn't really feel, you know, a lot of times you're going to have these jumps, but you feel like they're somehow related and they're working towards something. And this one felt a little more like abrupt as it jumped from point to point within the story. And you had some of these characters, like the police officers, you don't really know. You don't really get the sense like they're really going to matter other than they're just there to help solve this mystery. And when it's over, they'll be gone. You know, it just, to me, it just, something felt off about the story in this issue. It just didn't flow. And the problem is, I like Squadron Supreme. I like Hyperion. I was really looking forward to this book. I was expecting this to be the Batman of the Marvel Universe, more or less, because that's technically what he's supposed to be. And it just felt, something about it just felt off and it felt wrong. And I just didn't, I just couldn't get into it. And this is one of those where I read it and I really disliked the artwork. And the story just wasn't working for me, and I'm like, you know what? I'm not coming back for issue two on this.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to do so either. Roddy, just hold your thought just for a second.
Yeah, go for it.
I wanted to really, really criticize the art when it came to the design of the Nightwing cycle or whatever the hell that is that he's writing, because that was god-awful. When I saw that driving out towards me, I was like, what the hell is that design? I'm sorry. I'm putting it out there right now. That was...
I haven't gotten that far in the book yet, so...
I thought that was funny.
You know? Because you know what I'm talking about, Roddy.
I do know what you're talking about. Yeah. Now, so here's my thing with it. Story-wise, it was kind of mediocre, but I like David Walker's, you know, writing, and that technically that part was actually pretty good. I actually liked this story because it was actually the Batman of Marvel, as Dirt said, and I hate being reductive like that, but that's pretty much the closest parallel you're going to get. So it's got to happen to happen. And I kind of enjoyed it for that moment, point. The art I thought was great because, just like I said, I've enjoyed Ramon Villalobos' art since Original Sin, I think it was. Even though it was like, he has pretty much stepped it up on this one, and that's why I kind of enjoyed it about it, and that's the present thing. I'm willing to admit that. Which is cool. I don't know. It was the beginning story. I just kind of took it as that, and we don't know where this is going to go. The side character, Tilda, was actually pretty funny, but it was also still, that part was kind of seemed a little off. Even though, like, I like the character, it was like, okay, you got this real serious dude here, and you got this woman who's the tech genius behind him, playing off him almost, not necessarily Alfred style, but more of a, not even Robin style, but kind of a split of the two, I guess, in a certain sense.
More like the dude on Flash.
Cisco?
Yeah. Right, like kind of Oracle style even, too.
Yes. Yeah. So it was more like that, which I kind of caught that. And yeah, I'm glad you said that because you're right. That is actually the closest parallel to that. So that said, I am going to come back and see what the second issue is going to be. I'm not sure, you know, how long I'm going to stay on the book, but I just want to actually see if this, at the very least, the first arc is going to actually go somewhere or lead up to something more than what it's presenting, which, you know, sounds all right, but it's a story that we've kind of seen before.
Sure.
All right. What else did we read? I almost feel like after talking about the big, like, four books this week, everything else is, like, rapid fire.
Yeah.
It's 10:30, so, yeah, let's rapid fire this.
Well, let me go ahead and get Ms. Marvel out of the way, because that is probably the best book I've had. Well, the book, best book I've read this week.
I was about to say, for me, that's the closest to being a real click of the week.
Yeah.
Contender, that and Doctor Strange.
Yeah, definitely. So here we have. So this is, I guess, this is the start of a new story. I can't remember, but this is basically. Well, no,
it's the road to Civil War II.
Right. This is pretty much kind of a going into that. Which, even though the Civil War stuff wasn't that pronounced, like you see a couple of messages here and there, but you know, Elvis shows up and what have you, but nothing real tying that close to it. But here we see Kamala and Kamala Bruner and crew at a science, I guess some sort of science competition where they're going up
the tri-state science fair in New York, involving Jersey, New York, and Connecticut.
Right, where they're going up against.
Isn't that what happened
in
the Fantastic Four movie?
I don't know.
I don't know what movie you're referencing. The one that doesn't exist.
That new hit Fantastic Four.
Oh, God.
So actually on that, here's something fun that happens in Dune. So not necessarily Fantastic Four based, but we have the conversation. They're going up against Miles Morales, Gonki, and the New York team. So apparently Miles doesn't know who Kamala's secret identity is, but she knows his. So she, as soon as she sees him, she kind of goes off and does her thing, sees, you know, what's happening. Miles kind of
his spider notices sense starts tingling.
Yeah, his spider sense goes around and finds out who did, but still didn't put two and two together. They're having this big science off between those two. Like, the round started, and then they pull off their one thing. The New York thing answers with this other thing, which looked like the broadcast energy transmitter from G.I. Joe.
Oh, you're right about that.
Then the New Jersey team answers with a pocket Mr. Fusion.
Yeah.
And then that's when things seem to just out of the blue pop off. And then, you know, the hero stuff starts and Nova pops in for like 2 seconds and then you don't see him ever again. You see a moment of recognition, seems like, from Kamala and Spider-Man, but we don't see anything about that. We probably will see that next issue. I don't know. But this issue was generally just a whole bunch of fun from front to back up until even after that, but before the superhero stuff started, this book was a whole lot of stuff. Like, even the artwork was great. You see stuff in the background, even while they're saving people, that just like, okay, this is kind of cute.
This was the return of Adrian Alfona.
Exactly. And it's just, this book was just fun. Like, I was just smiling through pretty much the whole way of this book because of the things that were happening.
Well, you know what's funny is that, G. Willow Wilson wrote, and I definitely agree with Roddy, the really fun parts of this book were the lead-ins and the build-up during the science fair competition, because just some of the dialogue and the banter back and forth was just, was outstanding, just kept you laughing and smiling and wanting to turn the page to see what was going to happen next.
And the art.
Oh, absolutely, the art. My one criticism about the art was Alfona's depiction of Miles. Kind of made him look a little older than what I was used to. But other than that, which is funny because he's so good at depicting these really young kids, he kind of made Miles look a little too old for my taste, in terms of like what I had recognized him to be in Pacelli's art and David Marquez's art. He seemed a little bit older.
Yeah, you're right, because even if they hadn't called him out, it was like, wait a minute, that it looks just enough not like Miles to be like, well, wait, who is this dude, if they hadn't called it out?
Exactly.
So you're definitely right on that one.
So
plus, Sky Shark.
Yeah, that was, listen, some of the stuff in here was just awesome. Like, the whole Sky Shark thing, that was awesome. Like, the splash page where they were presenting that particular science fair project / like world-changing invention, that was phenomenal. So, and like you said, with the broadcast, what was it? The
broadcast energy transmitter.
Energy transmitter, like the homage to the G.I. Joe limited series television cartoon, the cartoon. That was great. So, this was a lot of fun. There is a small tie-in to Civil War II at the very end of the book. So that's where that's where you get the tie-in to the upcoming crossover. But otherwise, up until that point, this was just a study in these teen characters, and that's what made it so fun. With the backdrop of just them at a science fair competition, and that's what made the book so fun. It wasn't all about superheroics. It wasn't about family drama. It was just these kids being smart and having a lot of fun at it, and that's what was so good. That's what was so fun about this book.
Yeah, if anything, the little Civil War message was the one that kind of detracted from it.
Kind of, but even, it was also at the last.
Because it was even like it was even pointed. It was about like, why are superheroes, you know, fighting each other? That's never nothing comes out of good that.
Yeah.
I feel like putting Miles versus Kamala in the science fair was like another sort of nod at Civil War, showing how heroes can go against each other, and some of the stuff in the dialogue Wilson slipped in there about like the energy. Both teams were working on like recyclable energy solutions, and you know, is that good for society? I think that's some sort of the things that can be touched on, and
it's just drawing some parallels.
There were a lot of parallels that way.
Kinetic team always trying to disqualify people,
right? Because for animal they're 80% cruelty. Lawyers.
Yeah. You want to talk about bad art? Mighty Thor number 7.
Okay, all right. So I'm gonna jump to somewhat to defend this, somewhat, because I read this mostly digital on my smaller screen, and I definitely agree this was pretty hard to decipher. But the one caveat is it's kind of the same, because this is Jason Aaron after all. If you go back to his run on Mighty Thor, there were a couple of kind of these interlude stories that seemed out of place, that were done by different artists, not fill-in artists, but different artists than the regular series artists. And it turns out afterwards, it all tied together, obviously. So don't discount what's happening in this book, because Jason Aaron is definitely going to tie it back in later. But in terms of art that's difficult to follow, yeah, this takes the cake this week.
Yeah, the story is fine.
Right.
The art's like I'm sitting here looking at the cover, and I read it physically before the show started. So we had someone read it physical, someone read digital. I'm sitting here looking at the cover again. It's like, wow, that's what the villain in the story actually looked like. Okay. Because he doesn't look anything like, the only thing that resembles him in the actual book is his face a little bit. And that's if you can make it through the very dark coloring, and you can't follow action from one panel to another. It's kind of just all over the place.
Yeah.
And plus, I'm ready to get back to the main story. I want to see what's happened with Thor Odinson and where we left him like 3 issues ago. He's stuck somewhere. He's like, he was a prisoner somewhere.
Oh yeah, that's right. Like trapped. Like they had he'd been captured. Was it
something like that?
Yeah.
So we haven't seen it. We haven't seen him since Secret Wars ended.
Right.
So this little side quest story is done. Now we can get back to the main course. I did like how when Thor and I forget this dude's name on the cover now, Bull started to be Bull something the Black.
I can't help you.
Bolton the Black or something like that was the dude's name.
Bodolf
the Black, and how they're flying across the Earth, and it's like they're taking pit stops to these other like locations in the Marvel Universe back in the Viking days of the 800s. It's like they stopped by Atlantis and check with whoever the queen of Atlantis was at the time. They go over to what's in there? Iron Fist's land.
Kunlun, yeah.
Yeah, they actually don't go there, but they make a reference to it. They make a reference to the Panther in Wakanda, I believe. Mm-hmm. And this is all in 800s. So that was kind of cool. And the very last page showed like a... Actually, even before that, there was a like one page... As they're doing the jumping around to the different locations in the Marvel Universe, like Aaron in the one word balloon, Aaron's like, well, this is a story for another time. So I'm like, what the hell is he trying to tease right now?
Yeah.
And then on the final page, they show like these cave markings that look similar to this guy holding the axe on the cover here. And it's like, it was Bodolf, Thor, and like three other characters. So I'm like, who are these other three people that they have up here? Are they going to come into play in the story in the future? So, Let's see. Extraordinary X-Men number 10 continues the story of Jeff Lemire's X-Men team and their adventure in the future, Omega World, Apocalypse Wars, as Colossus is a horseman of Apocalypse, and they need to rescue rescue Colossus and the teen X-Men, Anole and Glob, and the other one that I forget the name of. And it's mostly like them trying to battle Colossus and get the Ark that has like 600 new mutants in it. We see Magic training her new apprentice in magic to see. We see Jealous Forge, because of course he's not over Storm yet, even though that was years, decades ago. And that was about it. Story continues, so they're still in the future. And that is all I've read.
Alright, I'll just touch on very quickly Doctor Strange number 8. It continues, it's part 3 of Last Days of Magic. The team of magical adventurers led by Doctor Strange includes Scarlet Witch and a few other characters. They're basically on the hunt for the last magical artifacts that still hold some magic in the Marvel Universe that they can help use in their battle against the Imperial, the robotic race that is looking to exterminate all magic in the known universe. It's another part of the story. It is definitely not the first issue that you should pick up. You should try to backtrack a bit. But at the end of the day, this is still very strong stuff from Jason Aaron and Chris Boccolo and Tim Townsend. Just great, great stuff. If you've been keeping up with this, make sure you read this. It is another good chapter in this story. You know, for anyone who's kind of criticized Boccolo's art, especially for being kind of muddy and hard to follow when he was on the X titles, this is not it. This is so well done. So well done.
Yeah. It was read more like an Indiana Jones adventure than in certain spots than a Doctor Strange, but that was
sure.
Probably good about it. You see right. Scarlet Witch with a shotgun.
Sure. I was about to say, you know what? It's because, and it's obviously allowing Aaron to explore these aspects of the characters because of what's happening in the story, the death of magic. So
right.
In the Marvel Universe. So it definitely allows for Aaron to really stretch these characters out a little bit and put them through different paces.
Mm-hmm. And was that cover kind of evocative of anything to anybody?
Sylvester Stallone and Cliffhanger?
Okay, no, not that. But it's probably just me. Don't worry about it. But
you mean the trailer from the movie, maybe?
No. Of an event, but that's fine. It's all good. That was probably just me.
Just tell us already.
Yeah, I was just thinking. I was like that, and maybe it's just me, but it was like it seemed like that was like a 911 thing because you see that there's that famous picture of the dude falling out the window. I don't know if that was actually the case or not.
Yeah,
like I said, that might have been just me.
What else was read this week?
Well, speaking of Jason Aaron, I guess Star Wars number 19 is where we go. This is the end of that. It looks to be the end of that jailing arc that they had. We come to find out who is underneath the Max mask, character.
I did not like this reveal.
Yeah, I was like, that was kind of weird. Who is a character? Spoiler alert.
Don't spoil it.
Okay. Well, the character has been seen. The has been seen before if you read a specific book.
I had high hopes. No, I'm not going to spoil who it is. Going to spoil who it is, but I will say I had high hopes that character would branch out because I wanted to see more of the stories like when he first appeared.
Exactly.
Because that seemed like such a rich and untapped part of the Star Wars universe. And then they did this to him, and it was just like, it was like a fart in a car. It was just like,
no.
This is just so, ugh.
Yeah, I'm kind of with that on that one because I'm like, okay. And granted, there is possibility that we could see him because we don't know what led up to this happening. Well, we do. But
I wanted more stories like his first appearance,
right?
Because there was a Star Wars character in the old Dark Horse line that had a similar storyline, had a couple of series, and I really enjoyed them, and so I was hoping that that's what this was going to lead to, was kind of Marvel's version of taking on that character and those types of stories, and instead it was like they just flushed it all down to make him this.
So far, like I said, we don't know. They could do flashbacks and stuff like that to kind of do a lead up to that. But it's still, you're right. I was like, really, we could have had a little more time with that character to see a little more of his backstory, more stories like that. I was a little disappointed in that.
Day after WrestleMania on this one.
Jeez.
I don't know
what that means, but okay.
Because leading up to WrestleMania, you always have high hopes of what's going to happen with the show. And then the day after you've seen the idiotic moves that they've made with the characters, then you get upset. And that was with this character that had a lot of promise and potential. And then day after, he's flushed down to the mid-card.
I gotcha. So, yeah, and the only other thing that happened in this book is Aphra. Something happened to Aphra. Well, Aphra gets her. Aphra gets taken care of. And at the end of the book, we see some stormtroopers.
Some super troopers.
Exactly. And then the Imperial March plays.
Littering and could have, actually. So that was that.
And Matthew Wang would like us to know that he totally agrees with us on Star Wars 19. So
okay.
It's not just us.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good.
Well, I'll make sure to read this on the way into the office tomorrow, or tonight after we're done.
Let's see. I only have a couple more because I think we've pretty much tapped out most of the big stuff. Patsy Walker Hellcat was fun. It was a guest artist who was the same person who did Bravest Warriors, which is why the art was so different because all of the characters looked
cartoony.
Yeah. Yes. More so, almost chibi in certain cases. They didn't even look like the characters that they were supposed to be in a couple of panels. But the crew has a day off. They go to Coney Island. They meet up with a reminiscent arcade who was reminiscent about the old days of when he started Murder World and decided to go back to his roots. You know, they have a battle. All is good at the end. So it was okay.
All right. How many more do you have? I just got a couple.
Let's see. Two. That's it. Mockingbird number 3.
Did you
have that one?
Yes.
Okay, let's go for it.
All right, so we are continuing the kind of backward storytelling that Chelsea Kane is utilizing here. We're in another chapter of this book that is going to help us understand what was happening in the first issue. And this issue dealt with a lot of the things that we may not have known about Bobby Morse and her character, because I don't think we've ever had a real proper origin for her told in the books. And I think they used this book to kind of explain her upbringing and how she sort of came to be a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, because when we first meet her, she's a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent way, way back. Right. So, this story basically touches on her origin and also how she deals with the current threat of, is it inhuman or a mutant, or is just some powered, it's somebody powered.
Somebody powered. They never go into whether it's inhuman or not. They're just saying, hey, this person's young. It almost seemed like they were dressing it up as if they were meeting by the way they were talking about it. Mm-hmm. Because by the news reports that come out in there, it was like, well, yeah, this is an early onset. They were almost treating it like a disease also. But it was like, hey, this person has early onset powers. You know, this teen who's X amount of, you know, just like mutants would have manifested their powers when they were teens, kind of thing. But they don't necessarily say any of that.
Right.
Outside of that, and I think, Bobby did have a backstory, but it was, like you said, it was kind of more of the S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff, because I do remember seeing an old story from, like, back in probably, I don't know, 70s or something, or late 70s or something, that had her backstory. But this kind of goes a little further than that, because this is basically them saying, like, yeah, she's always wanted to have powers, and, you know, so she's always wanted to be best. And there was also a bunch of messages in here about, mm-hmm. you know, empowerment and this and another. And so, and there was some stuff out in the world that kind of also played into that.
Definitely.
It was a pretty good story.
Listen, I like this limited series because I'm reading it to see how it all fits together.
Right.
That's what's keeping me reading it. So, you know, I'm looking forward to, you know, to see how this wraps up.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of wrapping up, Shaft, Imitation of Life, number 4. This arc has ended, and I think the book, I'm not sure, because I hadn't checked. But this is definitely the end of this story. Shaft was trying to get away from doing the jobs that he was doing that was getting him into a lot of firefights and trouble. He took what he thought was an easy job. Turns out that it was not so easy job, and he ends up, you know, not being able to get away from who he is. And there's also a thing about art imitating life, which I thought was interesting. That was a thread throughout the course of this issue, which kind of plays into, I guess, some other things that could have come out in other books, at least one of the book. But yeah, it was a pretty good story. It wrapped it up all nicely and neatly. I'm not sure if it's going to come back again, and it didn't say anything at the end of it, whether there was going to be anything else outside of that. But it was enjoyable.
All right. The last book I'll talk about is Joyride number 2, the next installment of the book by Jackson Lansing, Colin Kelly, and Marcus Cho, our guests on the Comic Book Chronicles last week, episode number 168. If you're looking to listen to it via your favorite podcast app or on YouTube, or watch it on YouTube.com. This story, this is the continuation of the story of a group of teenagers who escape Earth after it's kind of turned inward upon itself in an effort to keep itself safe from space invaders. And these teens have basically escaped Earth space, and we find out that they've taken a spaceship to the closest space station type area, and they've gotten into some trouble. And this is some of the stuff that had been teased last week. There's the addition of another character to the team named Coldstack. And we also find out that there is some pursuit coming from Earth to come after them for having escaped from Earth. So there's a couple of storylines that are moving forward in this book. It's not just the adventures of the teens, but also a description of their pursuit. So it's pretty interesting. The art by Marcus Cho, in all seriousness, I did not have a copy of issue number 1, a hard copy, last week when we were doing the interview. I had only read it on my tablet. But seeing the art on the page, on the printed page in full color, it's pretty nice. That spread that we had showed last week, I'm going to hold up the page, where it's a two-page spread of the group kind of trying to escape from law enforcement on that space station type planet. It's called a swag station, kind of funny. But the bottom line is, it's just beautiful stuff on the printed page. Seeing it on a smaller screen does not do it credit, does not do it justice. So it's a fun read. Again, still has a great spirit to it.
Get a bigger tablet, man.
That too. Well, I mean, just very quickly before we move on, the reason why I have a smaller, only a 7-inch tablet, is because riding on the subways of New York, it's easier to maneuver and hold in one hand.
Well, yeah, and you're more likely to get a surface ripped out of your hands as someone runs off.
Well, I wouldn't have it ripped out of my hands, but when it gets tight and crowded and you're just kind of like standing like this with it, you know, like right up against you, it's just easier to hold a 7-inch tablet.
Yeah, and plus, I mean, the outside of I get the width of it. That tablet that I know you have, it, you know, it's a pretty good reading one because it's thin enough. Yeah, you have the Nexus.
Yeah, no, but so. I'm just saying, man, if you got like a 16-inch tablet, you
can use the one bigger. Yeah, I'm just gonna walk on with an iPad Pro, you know.
Yeah,
why not? I've got a friend who bought one of those 2-in-1s. It's the laptop where you can flip the keyboard back and use it as a touchscreen tablet, but it's a 16-inch screen. So he flips it into tablet mode, and I'm like, dude, you're holding a TV set. Like, what is this?
It's got to be heavy. Wow.
Yeah, it is pretty heavy. It's like he's got to set it on his lap when he's reading on it. Otherwise, it's – but still, man, you get a big enough tablet.
Oh. Well, listen, I may be researching a larger tablet. Maybe, you know, it's time to go on Groupon for, like, whatchamacallit, like an older iPad, like a larger iPad or a larger tablet.
So, right.
We'll see. But anyway, I'm done for books.
Wait, I do have one more, but this is a really, really, really quick one. Captain Marvel number 5. Captain Marvel gets her Captain Kirk on because they're still fighting. Well, this is the end of that arc, and they're still fighting the aliens who were trying to take over the station. They do that. It was actually pretty nice read. You can absolutely see, especially in the first few pages, see some Star Trek parallels by the way things were being handled. Can't remember too much of that happened because that was one of the early books that I read. But outside of that, it ended that arc and it was alright.
Alright.
I've got a couple real quick. Spider-Man Deadpool. This is by far the best Deadpool of the three that are out right now. This is a laugh out loud book. I mean, seriously.
Nice.
The stuff in this is so inventive and creative and funny at the same time. Plus, Peter Parker dies and runs into Mephisto,
who
whispers a secret in his ear. He's like, no matter what you do, there's something missing. There's an emptiness that you'll never fill, and kind of mocks him with this knowledge of something from his past is missing. And it's like, yep, that's the storyline that pissed everybody off back in the day. Thanks for bringing that up in this book. But, you know, it was fun. Red Wolf, number 6, this ends the series, and boy, did they have to wrap it up quick. You could obviously tell that this was going to be a much longer storyline, and they had to jam so much stuff here at the end and just finish things off. It did not get the